Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Adrian Clark, the tactical analyst, and Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror. It was a sliding doors moment. Jurgen Klopp nearly became Bayern Munich manager in 2008. Instead, they gave the job to Jurgen Klinsmann. Remember him? They certainly picked the wrong Jurgen. Two Bundesliga titles later, Klopp turned up at Liverpool. In this, his fourth season, it's all coming together. A classic Anfield night awaits on Tuesday. So, Adrian, Bayern going to regret their decision?
Well, I don't think they would have had any regrets, to be honest, because they've done pretty well, haven't they?
Your pokers didn't do a bad job when he finally came in, did he?
Exactly. So it's not as if they've had barren years, but I see where you're coming from. He's a very good manager at Jurgen Klopp, but Bayern have had some terrific head coaches as well and some great teams. And this team that arrive at Anfield this week are full of star-studded individuals. I don't think we should be writing them off of causing what would, I guess, be considered an upset, really, in terms of knocking Liverpool out of the competition. You look at the names, these are big game players with a lot of experience of nights like this. And I think they'll relish the test at Anfield. I think those that are saying that Liverpool are going to walk all over them, getting a little bit ahead of themselves.
Mm. I think any team with Robert Lewandowski in it, you know, he's just one of the great strikers of recent years in European football. And particularly for a Liverpool side who are defensively weak, missing Van Dijk, I think Lovren looks like he's failed to get himself fit, doesn't it? Suggestions that Matip could be in defence with Fabinho. He's going to fancy that big time. But I think just to come back to the Klopp and Bayern, I sometimes wonder with Klopp, he's tailor-made for a club like Liverpool where fans sort of have that cult-like devotion for him, and he had the same at Borussia Dortmund. I'm not sure he'd have had that if he'd gone to Bayern Munich. It's a very different, it's like a juggernaut, you know, the beast. Yes. So it's very different, and I actually think he's far better suited to clubs like Dortmund and Liverpool.
Yeah, because they talk about Bayern in Germany as Hollywood, don't they? The Hollywood club,
right, yeah.
Because of the drama which surrounds them.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of background noise in the build-up to this tie from them. You know, OK, there's no Jerome Boateng. Mm-hmm. Looks like Ribery's turning up late because his wife gave birth. Taking into account what you said, surely though Liverpool on the night that they will generate huge emotion are dangerous.
Of course they are, yeah. Liverpool on European nights, well, any game at Anfield, their record tells you that, doesn't it? It's absolutely outstanding. And if they can get at this defence, and I think if there is a weakness of Bayern Munich, it's 100% at the back. I mean, they've hardly kept any clean sheets in the last
few
months.
Quite slow, isn't it, that defence?
Very slow. I mean, Hummels is not the force he was. Boateng, I don't know what's happened to him.
He's got flu, so he's not going to travel.
His form's fallen off a cliff anyway. Sula I quite like. The fullbacks are excellent, Kimmich and Alaba. But as a unit, they're not that secure. And I would imagine that Liverpool will fancy themselves scoring goals in this tie and in the first game, particularly if they can get at them, pinch
it's
the ball.
It's almost the wide men, isn't it? The emphasis is on both wide men because with both teams having weaknesses in that central defensive area, whichever wide players can create the chances for the centre-forwards, that they will come out on top.
That's why it's so significant that Koeman, from what we're told, is going to play after that injury.
Oh, yeah. Well, if he can make it, he's a massive addition for Bayern. But as you said at the top of the show, look, it is one of those one of those great games that anyone with even a remote interest in football should be looking forward to it so much. And the atmosphere there will be blinding. And it's the first game in a month, really. It's not just two big games this week for Liverpool. Mm. They've also got the Merseyside derby coming up within the next 3 weeks. They've got the away leg against Bayern as well, and it could be... I know we often talk about season-defining months, don't we? But this really could be one of them.
Yeah, and it's hard to predict how Liverpool will... what sort of shape they'll be in for the game, because they've had a little bit of a winter break, haven't they? I know it's only 10 days, but it feels as if they've just had this nice little breather.
It's come at a perfect time for them as well.
Absolutely perfect, yeah. And you'd imagine that for the first game of this little collection of biggies being Bayern, you'd think they'd be really at it. They might start to flag by the second half of the United game. It's just hard to win two big games back-to-back like that. But let's say it's a mouth-watering prospect, it really is. You'd fancy Liverpool, but with Lewandowski up against a makeshift Liverpool back four, with all that talent around him, I find it hard to find an argument that Bayern won't score. They've scored at least three goals in six of their last seven games. Now, people are saying Bayern, they're not what they used to be. That's pretty tidy. Mm. So Liverpool need to defend really well, particularly from the front.
Yeah, I take what you say about the defence and also the threat they pose wide. What about in that midfield area? You look at that... I don't see a lot of defensive cover in front of that back four. You look at James Rodriguez, he's always seemed to me to be the perfect World Cup player. He comes on, captures our attention, but where's the substance?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He's a tournament player, but he's got... it's that Latin flair that you just don't need in a team, you know, certainly not on a week-to-week basis. But again, the sort of player who can come along and over, whether it's just over 90 minutes of one leg or over the 180 minutes of two legs, it could be pivotal in the tie. You know, if he really does turn it on for both games, then Liverpool will find it very, very hard to shut him down. But as you say, Mike, just the consistency that he shows on a week-to-week basis is lacking. And he is one of those players that you'd look at and say... he's never made the most of his talent. I mean, look, he's not exactly done badly, has he? He's gone to Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, but he's perhaps never been the player that we thought he would be after that astonishing World Cup.
I think Kovac might just play it safe in this game and go for a more of a robust midfield. You could always put Kimmich in there, who's just can play anywhere. Mm. Goretzka, I think, is a good player. And then you've still got Javi Martinez and Alcantara. Bad players, are they?
No. And the first 45 minutes will be absolutely key, because they'll probably have looked at that Manchester City game last year when Liverpool blew them apart within the first half an hour or so and say, look, that is absolutely what we can't afford to do. Because if Liverpool are in control of this tie after 45 minutes, then it's a great job well done. But obviously, Bayern will come prepared for that.
Let's throw our conversation beyond that to Sunday and, you know, the tribal encounter at Old Trafford. Mm. Can Liverpool raise themselves for two emotionally draining games in a matter of days?
It's hard. It really is hard. We've seen it so many times with teams. Tottenham had it recently, didn't they? Where they had a collection of games back-to-back, and I think by the third game they blew up. Mm. And that is natural, I think. All I can say is that they've had this breather, and they had a really quite a gentle game before, didn't they, in terms of Bournemouth at home, 3-0. It was very much a cruise. So in terms of like needing to be at it full throttle, you could take it back almost a month for Liverpool, so they should be nice and refreshed.
Should it be hard, though, Aid? I mean, you say, you know, if you've got a game against Bayern Munich in the Champions League, you've got a game against Manchester United, you should surely, as a professional footballer, be getting up for those games. I understand maybe when the next game, you know, against one of the Premier League's lesser lights comes around, that's perhaps when you have your little wobble almost, you know, and drop off. But I would...
it's draining. That's what it is. Big occasions are draining. Mm. It's not... it's weird. It's hard to define why. But sometimes, just because of the nervous energy, and it sounds nonsense, but it's kind of true, that you build up so much nervous energy that you just sometimes just feel lethargic. Even though you're fit as a fiddle, going again in such a hostile environment in a hugely important game, it can drain you of energy. And I don't know where the science lies on that, but inside players' heads, it can happen.
Yeah, but also, you know, you've got the physical intensity of it all. I saw a piece earlier in the week where Pep Linders, Klopp's assistant, talked about organised, you know, their organised chaos. When you're playing with that heavy metal football or whatever you want to call it, it's a very, very physically demanding experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw that, and it reminded me of speaking to Tyson Fury before he took on Vladimir Klitschko, you know, and he that was how he described his plans for that fight. And there's a lot to it, because if... I sort of think back to Henri as well, Thierry Henry talking about Pep Guardiola when he coached at Barcelona. He would sort of tell them exactly where they needed to be for every move in the first two-thirds of the field. But then when you're in that final third, it was like, look, all bets are off. You go where you want, you make the runs you want. And it's, I get the feeling it's a bit like that with Liverpool, that, look, we have to have this structure in defence, we have the structure in midfield. But then when you've got the talents of Salah, Firmino, Mane and all the lads who are just behind them in the pecking order as well, there is going to be a slightly chaotic feel, a chaotic nature of it, because the speed with which they move. But of course, if you're a defender, and particularly if you're a Mats Hummels, who has had this slow accusation levelled at you, I mean, it's almost been the reason that, Premier League clubs have never really pushed that deal through for him in the end. You know, that sort of chaotic nature of Liverpool's attack, if they don't know what they're going to do, then the defenders won't either.
Yeah. Did Paris Saint-Germain give Liverpool any clues about how to attack Man United?
Wow. I mean, it's just blistering pace.
Sign Mbappe very quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Mbappe just unreal, wasn't he, in that game? We all know, it's not rocket science, we all know that Manchester United, despite their improvements under Solskjaer, we all know that they're not great at centre-half, don't we? I mean, it's obvious. Even at full-back, not outstanding. You could even say in central midfield that they lack a bit of mobility. You got a little tiger in Herrera, you got a strong guy in Matic, but I always feel that I've never been a huge Matic fan, because he can labour and he can have no-shows. And when he has a no-show Matic, you can just run all over him. So that is a way that that Liverpool will certainly look to get United. But Mbappe made the difference in that game, plain and simple.
Mm. Where do you look at Manchester United at the moment? There is so much stuff swirling around that club. You've got, on one hand, you've got the MD talking about, yes, we've got this fantastic roadmap for our app. You know, what on earth is all that about? You know, let's organise the open top.
Very handy for away fans, to be fair.
Yeah. Come on, Mike.
Let's be serious.
Apps are important.
Let's be serious. But equally, you've got, there was some talk yesterday about a Saudi potential takeover, which has been denied. It's not a football club anymore, is it?
Well, I mean, look, yeah, yes and no. It's a huge business and brand. I mean, but there is a football club being run, and at the moment, football-wise, it's being run pretty well. I realise they've had the, they didn't quite get the 11th, what was it, 9 wins out of 11, yeah. Or 9 wins out of 10 it was, wasn't it? And then, of course, the last one. But I feel a little bit for Richard Arnold, because I don't think he was particularly quoted in context with the roadmap. And I do...
Heavens forfend.
I do understand that, you know, chief execs and chief financial officers and all those top directors, you know, they do have a obligation to tell shareholders and investors where their money is going, and as importantly for those investors, what the returns are. So I can understand them having to do that. But I think with United at the moment, look, if we focus on where things are on the football field, then you have to say they're in a pretty good position. And we're speaking comparatively, of course. But they've set themselves up nicely by appointing Solskjaer, even on this short-term period. They've set themselves up nicely to get through to the summer and take stock then. And it's a very, very important decision coming up, whether Solskjaer's the man who gets the job, whether they go all out for Pochettino, which I think is falling a bit by the wayside now, the chances of getting him. Diego Simeone has been contacted to see of his interest, but of course he's just signed the new deal at Atletico. But whichever direction they go in, that's the most important summer they've had for since, obviously, Mourinho was appointed. And I think it's hard to be too critical of what United are doing in this complete instance.
The projections are that the wage bill would exceed £300 million. When if they're going to bring more players in, it stands to reason that others will leave. There's been some speculation that Lukaku might go.
Yeah.
Victim of Mourinho's downfall?
No, I think has he proved beyond dispute, Romelu Lukaku, that he is good enough to be Manchester United's number 9 long term? I don't think so. I think he's had good moments. He's had some really barren runs as well, hasn't he? When he joined United, I said that I felt he was a very, very good striker, but not quite up to being Manchester United's talisman. And I probably stand by that, really. So it might be better for him to move on. We'll have to wait and see. I know there's a story linking United with Dybala, wasn't there, and Lukaku going the other way. That could be something that works well for both parties moving forwards. I don't see Lukaku at this stage of his career being happy playing second fiddle to someone like Marcus Rashford or a potential new signing, especially having been the main man not so long ago.
He's not backed up his own stats, Lukaku, has he? Because if you looked at his statistics when he came into United, they were fantastic. The goal-scoring record was great, and he'd almost given himself that platform, having left Chelsea and gone to West Brom and scored goals, gone to Everton and scored goals internationally. It did look a very good signing for both, a very good move for both parties, but it just hasn't worked out for him.
Well, comparing with Aguero, comparing with Aubameyang, Kane, he's not the same level,
no.
And he's not ever really been in the mix for the Golden Boot, despite the fact that Jose Mourinho would pick him.
But he has the attributes.
No matter what happened.
He does have the attributes to have got to the
yeah.
same level, doesn't he? You know, the physicality, the ability, the eye for goal. But he, yeah, he
technically just, though, he's not quite there, is he?
No, but I think that's what, and that's sort of what I'm saying. You hoped when he went to United and got playing with supposedly better players that it would have moved him on technically, but he just hasn't taken the opportunity that was presented to him.
No.
You talked about stats, Tom. Sanchez, Alexis Sanchez, courtesy of the Times, been there at Old Trafford 392 days, made 37 first-team appearances, 5 goals. What's to be done about him?
That's like a bottle of tomato ketchup, isn't it? According to Solskjaer, it's all going to come flooding out in, with one pop on the around the back of the head, I think. But I think what's to be done with Sanchez, I think the best thing for United would be to get rid of him. I think the best thing would have been not to have signed him in the first place, because I can't help but think United shouldn't be surprised with what they're getting from Sanchez, from what I saw of him in his last year at Arsenal. He went completely off the boil. He drove me wild with these exasperated throws up in the air of his arms to tell the crowd, look, it was everyone else's fault, it's not mine, I'm trying my heart out here and the rest of the lads just haven't got the quality. And if I was United, I'd have been looking at that and saying, you know, we don't want that. That's not good for the team spirit. But I think it all harks back to being a signing that they made purely to stop Manchester City from getting him. And if you're Pep Guardiola now, you're looking at that, and particularly if you're in charge of Manchester City's finances, you're looking at that and laughing.
Yeah. Would Arsenal have him back?
No chance. No, it's not happening. Well, speaking of someone that follows the team closely, I hope it wouldn't happen. I couldn't see it. He's just... look, every dog has their day, and I think he's past his peak now. He's into his 30s, and he's on the slippery slope. The issue I think that Sanchez has had in recent times is that he doesn't really fit in with dressing rooms. Mm. And if you're delivering the goals and the big assists, then the dressing room can tolerate a guy that's a bit aloof and doesn't really want to hang out with them, is a bit difficult. But when that type of character, and he is that type of character, is not performing, then all the fingers of blame go towards that guy. It's human nature. And I think that, yeah, it feels as if there's a bit of a rift behind the scenes. Doesn't fit in. And they need to cut their losses.
And he's played a phenomenal amount of football in recent years as well, with the games for Chile, you know, in the international breaks and the summers. And it was non-stop for him for a period of 3 or 4 years, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, that has to take its toll.
And he's always given the ball away. Like, it's always been incredibly frustrating to watch. And he will let you down numerous times in the game. But at Arsenal, he almost always delivered those big moments, and at United, he just hasn't, and that's why he'll be deemed a failure.
Similar question to you that I asked Tom, this time concerning Mesut Ozil.
Yes.
What to be done? 100 games he's missed.
Too many, yeah. I mean, he's had a lot of sickies, hasn't he, Mesut Ozil? I don't know what the story is there. All I can say is that from a football point of view, Arsenal are a better team when Mesut Ozil is in it and when his mind is right. So, in Unai Emery's shoes, I would be doing all I can to get Mesut Ozil's mind right, mind on the job, and to get him in that team, in the position that he enjoys the most, because Arsenal have lacked inventiveness and imagination this season, the kind that he brings. He doesn't bring it every week, but he will bring it much more often than the guys that have played ahead of him. And for that reason, I desperately hope they can find a way to incorporate him back into the squad, because at the moment it's a waste of a really gifted talent. In terms of creating open play chances in the Premier League, Arsenal are ninth. Wolves, Palace and Fulham.
Yes.
Wolves, Palace and Fulham have created more chances from open play than Arsenal this season. There is a dearth of creativity right now that needs addressing.
It's not like he's paid to create either, is it? Well, do you know what? I just want to pick up on what Aid said earlier about the mental side of the game and how exhausting and how draining big games can be. I wonder how mentally drained Ozil has been in the last few months from everything that went on with Germany in the summer. I remember we went out to Singapore for the pre-season tour, and there was so much focus on everything that was going on with him and Germany at the time, and he chose not to talk about it. You know, he put the statement out and then got on the plane and flew to Singapore, and all hell broke loose while he was on the flight in terms of the story. And I just wonder whether over the course of, you know, not necessarily the first couple of months of the season, but once things started to calm down a little bit, whether that was when he took stock of the situation and whether that's played any or had any effect, any detrimental effect on some of the performances this year.
Mm. Talking of all hell breaking loose, what happens if, God forfend, they lose to Bartek Borisov?
Yeah, well, it can happen. Yeah, it could happen. I mean, as I've just pointed out, Arsenal are struggling to create chances. Thankfully, they've got two strikers that they know how to finish in Lacazette and Aubameyang, but, of course, Lacazette's missing for this game, which is a blow. It would be a really sad state of affairs if Arsenal were to crash out to Bartek Borisov. Yeah, the mood would be dark, to say the least. But I retain confidence. I have confidence in Emery. I genuinely do. I think he's done enough as a coach before to give him time. But I think most Arsenal fans would have liked him to have had a better idea on his number one 11 by now, and certainly his number one system. And I don't think he's any closer to knowing that than he was when he walked through the door, which is the one criticism I would have of him.
I think they need at least another couple of transfer windows as well. I mean, and I'm talking summer transfer windows, not the January ones. I mean, obviously Aaron Ramsey will go, and that will give him, Mesut Ozil we expect will go, and that will give him a chance to shape, you know, even if he's only bringing in another two or three players as direct replacements for them, are going to be some significant...
I would go 8 out 18, something like that. I would go big. I think it's the right time to sweep the decks. I really do. I just think there are too many players there that are not... If Arsenal have pretensions to be title challengers and to really push the likes of Liverpool, City, Manchester United and Spurs... and Chelsea, of course, then they have to sign better players. Mm. At the moment, I do believe that Unai Emery is a little bit surprised at the lack of quality that he inherited. And because of that, I would expect wholesale changes. And I think that would be good for everyone.
Need to start feeding them burgers as well if Bartek Borisov's their dietary requirements.
You see that photograph of them early in the morning after the game.
7 a.m. the next morning.
Whacking back a double cheeseburger.
Keeping it real, weren't they? But look, they were coming to London, weren't they? So they're taking this seriously, this tie. I mean, they've been over here a while, ready for it. And I don't know what the atmosphere will be like because it kicks off before 6 p.m, which in London, I don't know how anyone's going to get there in time. So it could be a strange atmosphere. Arsenal need to hit the ground running and start fast in this match.
Yeah. You mentioned Aaron Ramsey, Tom. Is he setting a trend by running the contract down? You know, no one can argue with the sort of wages he's reported to be getting at Juventus.
What a deal.
400 grand a week. I noticed that Ilkay Gundogan is now going to run down his contract, it seems, at Manchester City.
Yeah.
Are we in now an age of players imposing their power on clubs?
Yeah, it's quite strange, really, because I thought clubs had moved to such a stage where they'd moved that past that and were never going to allow it to happen with players that they wanted to keep. And with Ramsey almost as well, I don't know whether he chose to run the contract down because the offer was there and then it was withdrawn, wasn't it? So it was more a case that Unai Emery said, no, actually...
Probably above Emery, wasn't it?
I would be surprised if it was, actually, without Emery's input into it.
I mean, smacked of financial expedience to me.
Yeah, I mean, it did. And look, it you could argue it's worked out. It will work out well for everyone because I think Arsenal, as Aid says, I agree. I don't know whether 8 changes in one summer works, but I can see where you're coming from with that. And I think Aaron Ramsey's been there so long, he's clearly part of the problem, the old problem, and I'm not saying a big part, just, you know, key or sort of in there, a matter of it. And whereas, so if he moves on and gets himself this £400,000 a week deal, which he's done, great for him, the club get his big wages off and can go elsewhere and bring more players in like Torreira, you know, who perhaps haven't got that last decade of Arsenal-ness about them.
Mm. On City, yeah, they're a Schalke. The mentality seems to be right. You know, the way they approach the Newport game in the FA Cup. Also, Pep seems to be really engaged this season.
Oh, he's on it, isn't he? Yeah, you can see. Oh, the Burton game. I mean, how ruthless were they? Yeah. They didn't have to be like that, did they? They didn't have to score 9. They wanted to score 9. And even in the second leg, He didn't play the kids, not all of them. He went pretty strong at Burton. Same at Newport. No, really impressive. And they've hit, their season has just gradually gone on this upward curve, hasn't it? And you just think, if it continues to go on the curve, on the trajectory it is, then they will pip Liverpool because they're certainly playing better than Liverpool at the moment. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. With Gundogan, something's got to give, hasn't it, at City in terms of bringing Foden through. If Pep rates Phil Foden as much as he says he does, he has to create a vacancy in there, doesn't he? Mm. Who's going to go, I wonder? It won't be De Bruyne, it won't be Bernardo Silva. You can really think about David Silva or Gundogan. So I don't know whether they'll move heaven and earth to get one of those out, potentially Gundogan out, before he can run that contract down.
Mm. They've got Schalke, who basically play, I think, for 50 minutes with 10 men at the weekend. It's really, probably in terms of the ties they could have got, it's perfect for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And City, they've still got plenty to prove, haven't they, in the Champions League? You know, this, the prove that the mentality is there to take them on to win it. I mean, I think if they can win back-to-back Premier Leagues, then it will show that they've taken a big step forward mentally in the last couple of years. But there are still huge question marks, and Schalke you would expect them to put away over the course of two legs, no problem at all. But once we get past this round, then we're down to the nitty-gritty, and when they're starting to come up against the bigger teams than Schalke, then that's where the questions need answering.
Mm. Just take a quick tangent here, if I could. Yeah. Raheem Sterling didn't play on Saturday. He was on the bench. Yeah. Booed at Newport. Booed wherever he goes. Yet there's a really good kid in there. Yeah. And I thought that again, Paul Hurst in Times this morning did a little piece about there was a young lad who'd been racially abused. Sterling had written to him, encouraged him, and he met him after the game. I think sometimes we're about cynicism and commercialism and controversy. Should we just dwell on the humanity of it? I thought that was a fantastic gesture.
Yeah, I mean, the more I learn about Raheem Sterling, the more I like him, and the more it seems like he's growing into a really mature, sensible young man. I mean, his reputation is completely unfair, and he's doing a lot of good things. I thought the way that he handled the racist abuse at Stamford Bridge was outstanding as well, and I think he conducted himself with dignity throughout that. Putting all that to one side, he's having a brilliant season again. Mm. This kid is some player. You just mentioned Phil Foden. It's sort of like people rave about players like Phil Foden more than Sterling, but Sterling's been doing it at the highest level for years. He's English, he's young, he's talented. The more I know about him, the more I like.
His career decisions have all been proved right as well, haven't they? You know, from QPR's academy to Liverpool, good move. You know, really, really got a great grounding there and learned how to play Premier League football. Then went on to Manchester City, has won things, you know, and has proved that had he stayed at Liverpool, he wouldn't have won those things yet. You know, I think a lot of... Look, there have been things where we in the press have been probably guilty of reporting things in a certain way, as he pointed out after the racism situation at Stamford Bridge, which he's absolutely right, needs to be looked at, needs to be addressed, needs to be dealt with going forward. I think he himself now would put his hand up and say, look, there's certain things I've done along the way off the field, which perhaps haven't reflected me in a good light as well. But I think... Yeah, certainly, you know, he's been a very young boy and a very young
boy. He's grown
up
basically
in front
of
the spotlight. Yeah. Absolutely. And yet he, as you say, he's proving now, he's maturing into a very impressive young person.
Because you see him at England get-togethers.
Yeah.
And he is good with the media there, isn't he?
Yeah,
and there is an informality about him there.
Yeah, yeah. And he doesn't duck questions, which, you know, is from the press point of view. You know, so many times you ask people questions and you don't get a proper answer to it. You know, you go around the houses. But whereas with Sterling, you get an answer to the question you asked him. And he doesn't hide, doesn't shy away from the harder questions as well, particularly in recent years. And I think that's to be applauded.
Yeah, and in terms of his contributions on the pitch, I've said it before, I think Leroy Sané might be the best left winger in the world. It keeps him out of the best Manchester City 11, really. I think right now Pep Guardiola is in the Champions League final. I think Sterling will play. And that's how good he is, and I think we should appreciate him.
But we do love a bit of controversy.
We do, yeah.
So let's look at Leicester. Let's have a bit of manager watch.
Yeah.
Vardy on the one hand, Puel on the other. Who wins that little power struggle?
Well, Vardy, I think, is more powerful at Leicester than Claude Puel. I don't think either.
They're a strange team at the moment.
They are a strange team. Look, I think I'm no fan of Claude Puel. I think Leicester City would be better changing coach. No point now. This season's nothing to Leicester now, isn't it? They're mid-table. They've gone out of the cup competitions when I think they could have progressed further. So, no, I think they wait to the summer and then they get rid of Claude Puel. Jamie Vardy is on the wane, but he's still their best striker. And for that reason, he should still play. Why he left him out at Wembley, I don't understand. And there's a lot of things about Claude Puel that leave me scratching my head, really, in terms of his approach and his selections. It's clearly knows his football, but Leicester City supporters, their gripes towards him are entirely founded, in my view.
There were quotes attributed to Peter Schmeichel recently as well.
Yes.
About
that was interesting.
Which you know, were remarkable for a very prominent and well-known parent to come out and say...
Can you be specific for the reason?
Yeah, well, effectively saying that Kasper would be off if Puel stayed, you know, and...
All they need is a proper manager, was basically...
Yeah, it was quite extraordinary, you know. It's the sort of thing that Wojciech Szczesny's dad used to say, wasn't it? We used to laugh about it, but it obviously carries more clout because it's coming from Peter Schmeichel, who's so well-known and revered in this country. But, yeah, when issues like that start... I mean, I'm not sure Schmeichel's maybe the goalkeeper that he was...
No.
A couple of years ago, either. I think, you know, but I think if it came down to a straight choice, as you say, Vardy or Puel, Vardy for now is just about going to win that one. Schmeichel or Puel, I think Schmeichel wins every day.
Mm. Yeah, I think the squad that he's got, they should be seventh, clearly. And I think they're below mid-table right now, aren't they? So they can still bounce back, but they're underperforming.
It's odd when you get a manager who gets a real tune out of a team one week and then absolutely nothing the next week. And, you know, when there's so little consistency there, then there are clearly issues behind the scenes, as Maurizio Sarri is finding out at Chelsea. Yeah. And obviously it's more in focus because of the size of Chelsea as a club. But I think Puel falls into that category as well.
We'll talk about League Cup final and Chelsea a little bit later. Another big decision, Declan Rice declaring for England.
Yeah.
Heck of a player. And I could see him fitting into that England side quite easily.
Oh, if he gets in my team. If I'm picking an England team tomorrow, he's there. On form. I mean, he's been brilliant.
Isn't player, yeah,
he is
yeah.
superb. I think he is the best English defensive midfielder. He is pretty athletic. He recovers the ball so well. His use of it is really intelligent. And he's got the defensive qualities of a proper centre half. I think he could develop into a magnificent centre half in a back three if Southgate wanted to go that route. But right now, he gets in ahead of Dyer. For me and the other candidates as the holding midfielder in the team. So look, the rule is diabolical and it should be changed. Mm. But I think for the sake of his career, he's made the right call.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you. I don't think he should have been allowed to make the change. I think it should be cut off far earlier than to get to 20 and do it. But he's, as you say, 20 years old, commanding, controlling Premier League games against players with vastly more experience than he's got. And you know, if you think about the goal he scored against Arsenal, if he can just add the goals, which I know they're working on with him and try to add that to the armoury, he's just going to be...
Do you think the big guns are coming from this summer in the Premier League?
I would have thought that's quite almost inevitable.
I would have thought it's likely, whether or not it's a good move for him at this stage, or whether, you know, and I still... I mean, we look at Sancho and I know he's held up as the poster boy of what going off and playing games. And I know Rice probably would get games at a big club, but I still think, is he going to get the same number of games at one of the top six that he will get at West Ham next year? And I just wonder whether at this stage, like, everything's going right for him at this stage. You know, the England call-up is clearly coming. He's playing week after week. He's doing well. He's growing. He's progressing. Why not stay at West Ham for one more year, two more years, and then look to make that big step up then?
West Ham have got Fulham at home on Friday evening. Mm. Are Fulham doomed?
The defence just isn't up to scratch, is it? It's a defence that would probably be mid-table championship. And that's the reason that Fulham are where they are. I think their forward line is decent enough. If their rear guard was as strong as their attacking talent, then they'd probably be in mid-table. They didn't address it in January either, did they? I mean, last summer they made
Ricketts. They went so big in the summer.
Yeah, they made Ricketts in the transfer market. But in January, I really expected Ranieri and co. to go big on some defenders. They didn't. And what's happening? Surprise, surprise, there's no improvement. So, they're gone.
Yeah. We assume also that Huddersfield are not long for this world. Who gets the third place? Cardiff are at home to Watford, and they seem to be on a mission.
Yeah, they're. I mean, look, they've gone through a terrible tragedy in recent weeks with the loss of Salah. Just an incredible situation. But the way they've conducted themselves through that and the sort of mental strength that they seem to have taken from it has had, and I know it's absolutely no compensation at all, but on the pitch it seems to have translated into, you know, it's brought the players closer together, perhaps the team, the fans, and they are picking up points now and crucially they're scoring goals, which when I look at a team like Newcastle, that would be my worry for them. That would be why if I was in that little group, perhaps Newcastle would be the team that I thought without the goals going in. I think
they have got Huddersfield at the weekend.
Well, they have, which could make a difference, of course.
Yeah, I did look at the run-ins, sort of just did what we all do, you know, tried to work out points tallies based on expected on the opposition of the run-in. And I think Newcastle got the kindest of the run-ins.
Yeah,
that's all
true.
I'll say.
That's true, yeah.
So I had them up to about 38, 39 points. Unfortunately, with Cardiff, I had them around 35 points max, probably taking another 10. From the fixtures that they've got left to play. The two that stood out as having the hardest run-ins were Burnley and Brighton. So I don't think that they're out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination. Burnley, obviously, their win at Brighton will have given them a lot of confidence. But even though Brighton are going well in the Cup...
Southampton just seem to be stuttering a bit as well for me.
Yeah, their running is okay, but they're not... Yeah, they're very up and down, aren't they? But I like Hasenhüttl. I think this guy, there's something about that guy... He seems to be getting more of a tune out of the players than old Sparky did.
Burnley have got... they're home to Tottenham. Let's look at Tottenham. Pochettino and Son. Manager and player of the year?
Manager of the year, yes. I think so. I think there can be few arguments against that. I know, look, Manchester City and Liverpool fans will say whichever of their sides wins the league, and I still don't see Tottenham quite... as title contenders, even though they are so close. But apart from them, I think, given the fact they didn't spend any money, what Pochettino has done there this year in terms of managing the team and when they've suffered injuries to key players as well, he's still got a song out of other players. You know, the way Son has come in, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised because he's done it before when Harry Kane has been injured, but he's almost not just... It's not just about the goals with Son. He's taken the mantle of the team, you know, he's taken the weight and expectation on his shoulders. And I think he's absolutely deserves to be in the running for player of the year. Yeah. Whether he'll get
it,
I don't know. I mean,
I would have him in the top six. I think contender.
You look at Aguero, don't you?
I think Aguero and Van Dijk would be my two picks. I still think Van Dijk, especially Liverpool, go on to win the title, which we won't know when the votes are cast. Yeah, Van Dijk would get it, but Aguero's making a good charge for it, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think Son is Spurs player of the year. Pochettino is not manager of the year. Sorry. I mean, he's doing well, but the cupboard is still bare. Well, he's got to be one of the top two. I mean, Pep Guardiola,
if he wins the quadruple, then...
got a pretty good chance of landing it.
Yeah, but in terms of resources...
In relative terms.
Where Klopp has taken Liverpool from where they were even last season, which was Champions League finalists, but in terms of Premier League...
25 points behind...
The points difference is incredible from Klopp. Pochettino is doing an admirable job, and he's a terrific coach. He's not manager of the year.
That's enough from our Arsenal correspondent.
I'm going to leave you to bring that point up.
Some questions from the listeners and the viewers. Stu asks, do you think the contract extensions for Jones and Smalling are to ensure a decent transfer fee in the summer? If not, then Ole Gunnar isn't the man I thought he was. United need to be ruthless and get rid of the dead.
Yeah, a bit harsh, but possibly. Yeah, neither would be starters for me. I don't think he's looking to build the team around Jones and Smalling. I don't know. Yeah, it is a strange one, but clubs don't want to lose players free, do they? It's as straightforward as that. I do think, actually, for the sake of maybe Phil Jones' career, he should probably move on. Smalling seems to have sort of rediscovered himself. I was reading some good interviews with him in the papers at the weekend. You know, he's doing his best, isn't he, to stay there. He's trying to change as a person. And he's changed his diet quite dramatically. But, yeah, I don't think they'll be first choice.
I think if you look back to Sir Alex Ferguson, the way he used to go, though, with the likes of Johnny Evans and John O'Shea, you know, these were players... Look, we knew they were never going to be first-choice players, but they both get what it is to be Manchester United players. Eric Bailly... doesn't really know yet what it is to be a Manchester United player, or doesn't seem to show it. Lindelof, likewise, you know, he hasn't got that history with the club. So if United are making changes, bringing in three or four players in the summer as we would expect them to, then having the likes of Jones and Smalling there, you know, it's just that link to the past. And I think I think that's vitally important to clubs.
OK. Paul Fry asks, who will be the biggest loss to the Premier League, Hazard or Eriksen? Throw that one at you.
Hazard. I think Hazard would. And that's not to say that there's anything between them in talent, but I just think in terms of the personality that Hazard has brought to Chelsea over the years, he's won some significant trophies one year and then been absolutely awful the next. But he's been part of the whole Premier League story, and I think we'd really miss him if he went.
Yeah, I think they will both go, actually, in the next 2 years. It feels like Eriksen is made for somewhere like Real Madrid, isn't it? You do feel that. And Hazard, actually, I feel a bit sorry for him in terms of, I'm surprised that one of the true global giants hasn't gone
bigger.
He's
doing everything he can, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that they've not stumped up the cash for him, because I do see him as in that next bracket behind your Messi's and Ronaldo's. I think Mbappe is the heir to the throne, but Hazard isn't a million miles away.
Mm. Hazard will have to be at his best if Chelsea are going to do anything in the League Cup final on Sunday.
Yeah.
Holding out much hope for that?
No, not from what we saw in recent weeks, certainly not with the 6-0 demolition. I mean, look, Chelsea have proved once this season that they can do a job on Manchester City. The way they went about the game in December was excellent. I know they were on the back foot for a lot of the first half, but I think Sarri got his tactics spot on. The only problem was in the return fixture, Guardiola completely outwitted him. I think it's odds on for Manchester City to win. And you're right, Hazard, that's part of the frustration for Hazard, I would imagine, is that unless he carries the team on his shoulders, they're not going to win anything.
What do you make of what's going on at Chelsea?
I might have picked the wrong coach, actually. I thought I was a big fan of Sarri, and there's a lot about him I do like, but just what I don't understand is the unwillingness to try something different. It's not working. And every half-decent team has nullified Chelsea of late, and it completely confuses me why he won't have another idea up his sleeve. And for that reason, I think he'll lose his job.
Yeah, is that the limitations of the Italian mentality? You know, they're based mainly on repetition on the training ground. Yeah. And, you know, there is almost a lack of sensitivity to modern dressing rooms. You know, I'm told that before the 4-0 defeat at Bournemouth, on that morning, Sarri insisted on a full training session on a poor pitch at Poole Town. And the players weren't impressed. Is that almost like a story for our times?
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't take a lot to make Chelsea's dressing room.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
You know,
like
professional footballers, and if your manager tells you you're going to have a training session, then you know you need to go and have a training session. I think I'm not convinced Sarri was brought into Chelsea to win titles galore, to win the Champions League, to win. I don't think that will have been his remit, because there's been a great understanding at Chelsea for quite a few years now that they don't have the budgets to compete with the Manchester Cities, perhaps even Liverpool, United. They just can't get... And even Arsenal, really, they aren't paying the same figures out as they would. So I think he was brought in to introduce this Sarri ball, this style of football that everyone raved about at Napoli, even though it didn't win him any silverware there either. So if you brought a manager or bring a manager in to get a team playing in a specific way and the players can't adapt to it for whatever reason, because they won't or because they can't, then you change the squad. Yeah. And however long that takes, if it takes another couple of seasons, I think he deserves, as any manager I always think deserves, 2 years in charge of a team. And I think he does.
But yeah, he hasn't got the players to play his brand of football. No. I think that much is
clear. And I agree with Aid. I don't think he'll last it, because, as we know, there is just a revolving door at Chelsea. Yeah. But I don't think that's right.
And right on cue, someone's let slip, in inverted commas, that Zidane would be quite happy to go there if he gets 200 million in the transfer market. Wow. And by the way, guarantees that Hazard stays.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as Tom's pointed out, the both those scenarios might be unlikely, I guess. So I also think that personality does make a difference. I heard Manu Petit at the weekend was saying that the players, they've had Jose, pretty miserable, especially in his last season. Antonio Conte's second season, he hated everything. And then now you've got Sarri, who have we seen him smile? I don't think we have. They've grown used to quite surly managers. He made the point, this dressing room, they need, I suppose they need a Solskjaer. They need someone to actually bring the fun back to football.
If only that would work. Have we any proof that that works?
Well, the biggest fun in football, as you know, is winning.
Yes.
Who's winning on at Wembley?
Our City, yeah. I think it'll be much, much closer than six, but I can't back against City.
I agree. I mean, I'm so thrilled that we've got Higuain here in the Premier League, here in England, but I just think Aguero's going to do him again this week.
Well, it won't be six, but it won't be pain-free for Chelsea. The first trophy of several this season for City. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.